Let's look at those exercises in lesson 48, and then continue in chapter 49. 48A, change the genitives of the reflexives in the sentences below to the forms of idios so that the meaning in each sentence is unchanged. Okay. What I'll have you do, I guess, is just read the Greek as it is and then read it as you change it. They're all fairly short, so... John, why don't you go ahead in the first one there? Okay. Okay, idiano, because it's feminine. Polis, remember, is feminine, third question. Idian. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be idio?
No, because this is an adjective that is going to agree with the noun that it modifies. In other words, the confusion is that he'au tu is a pronoun, but idios is an adjective. So you get this difference, the distinction that we had before with... we had emos, remember, as an adjective that could be used in the position of a pronoun. So... idios can be used substantively sometimes, but if you had it idiu, you'd probably have into the city of his own, and you have a substantive, you know, in the city of his own one or something. But his own city would be just, it's just an adjective. Okay. So the other, you know, the trouble is we've both got similar paradigms. This one's an adjective, the other one's is a pronoun. Yes. Well, it depends on what position you put it in. You could say Elton Ace Tain Idion Polin or Tain Polin Tain Idion. You know, if you put it in the second attributive position. You need to have this in an attributive position. But you, either the first or second attributive position would be fine. But you see what happens, the form you have there, tain heau tu polin, you don't see that too commonly to see the genitive in that position. Normally you'd see tain polin heau tu or something like that, but I think they probably did that just to, well, not to trick you, but to make you discern the difference here in the construction. Okay, Jim, why don't you try number two?
Tone idion andra.
Idion would be what you put in there. Again, an adjective, and it's going to take its endings appropriately. Okay, so it'd just be accusative masculine singular. Numbers. Oh, by the way, I should. Anybody got a translation for the first sentence there?
He came into his own city.
Yes, he came or he went into his own city, right. And then the second one, anybody?
Every woman shall have her own man.
Yes, or let every woman have her own man, her own husband. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be a third person imperative. So, heketo. So that gives you that jussive idea, you know, similar to Hebrew. Okay, third one, Eric. Yes. Okay, you want idia to agree with himantia. In other words, it's an adjective, so it's going to be idia would be the form you want there. Again, it's kind of a little tricky here, but being an adjective, it's going to agree with the noun that it's modifying. And the idea of one's own comes from the idia, the id part of it, you might say, and then the ending is going to agree with the noun that it's modifying. So you'd have ta idia himatia or ta hanmatia ta idia, one of the two, either first or second attributive position. Okay, does anybody venture translation on this one? Anybody look it up? Okay, yeah, tahimatia is garments plural though. Yeah, and I checked this verb, I think it means to put on. Put on your garments, did you check it?
Yeah.
Is that what you came up with?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be either he gave him, and as it probably takes two accusatives, is what happens. He gave him his garments, you know, gave to him. Although, didn't check the syntax on that. It's either that or you'd be forced, if the outone is the subject, then you're forced to call it neuter, and then it'd be it. But if it's it, usually its don't give garments to people. So it would have to be maybe related to a child or something like that. So.
Wouldn't it be an intense use of
outone?
You put on the
Arion
garment?
Let me think here.
I suppose not, because...
Yeah, you usually need a noun to have outos associated with in order to get that intensive idea. Yeah. So those are the only possibilities. It looks like the thing, the verb probably is going to take double accusative or something. That's probably the only way to really make sense out of it. Okay, then number four. Who's up next? Glenn? Okay. Right. Ton idion misthon. Good. Okay, and any translation, anybody?
But each one will receive his own reward.
Right. But each one will receive his own reward. Good. Okay, number five. Let's see. Mark.
Dexon tai na ace to oikus pao tong.
Okay.
Dexon tai na ace to oikus idius.
Okay, two soikus. Well, you probably want two idius there to keep it in the predicate, keep it in a attributive position. Or you could have put two idius soikus, one of the two. Yeah, and translation?
They receive me into their houses.
Yes, they will receive me into their, well, into into their own houses, I suppose, into their own houses. Okay, and section 48B, just complete the sentences so that they will correctly render the corresponding English ones. Use the form of the reflexive pronouns only. So he's telling you which way to go here, because there are some other options. And we'll just have, I shall draw them into myself. Dale, go ahead.
Emauton,
right. Okay, pros emauton, accusative form there. These again are just pronouns, and you're going to be picking the form that's appropriate to the construction. And generally these are prepositions, so you're going to have to decide which one case to use. Yes, question?
I have pros emauton.
M-O-T-O?
No, Omega, the
other Oh, okay. You just had a dative form there.
Yeah.
Yeah, pros. Well, it's possible. I think pros is used once with a dative in the New Testament, and something like seven times with a genitive, almost always with the accusative. So, see, pros, since it's pros, I think if you didn't have the pros in it, you might have just looked at it and not seen the pros there, and you just put a dative there to myself. As a normal dative, but the fact that pros is there changes it. Pros takes the accusative almost always. Okay. Number two, I can do nothing of myself. Price. Yes, op mo2 again. Apo taking the genitive. And number three, you do not have the love of God in yourselves. Steve. Yes, he'au tois. Good. Data plural there. Okay, and then John number four, let us cleanse ourselves from every defilement of the flesh. Okay, he'autus, yeah, accusative plural. And number five, for we preach not ourselves, John, Jim. Yes, he'autus. Okay, remember this plural form is the same for themselves, yourselves, ourselves, so forth. Number six, he made himself son of God, Eric. Yes. Of course, Eporeson is taking double accusative here. He made himself something. So both of those in the accusative case. Number seven, Glenn, the Jews said to each other. Okay. Yeah, same thing. Yes, good. Okay, same thing there. All right, number eight, the sisters said to each other. Mark. Yes, he'autos, pros he'autos, feminine plural accusative. Number nine, they trimmed their lamps, that is their own lamps, Dale. Okay, yeah, you need he'auton omega nu because it's genitive plural. So you were just saying they trimmed the lamps of themselves, you know, their lamps. So you want it possessive idea here, so and it's plural, so it'd be genitive plural. He'auton. Okay, and then number 10, every kingdom divided against itself is laid waste. Rice. Yes, okay. He'autes. Genitive, singular, feminine. Referring back to kingdom. Okay, so 48C. Number one, pray for each other. Here you're supposed to use forms of the reciprocal pronoun, which would be allelos. So, pray for each other. Steve. Yes, alelon. Omega nu, genitive plural again. These are all going to be plural, so, and there's no nominative that you see. You've only got three to choose from. So, well, of course, you got masculine, feminine, and neuter, too. But you've got a pretty good odds of guessing right on most of these. Number two, let us love one another. Let's see, John?
Agapomen alelus.
Okay, agapomen alelus. Omokun upsilon sigma. Okay, and by the way, what kind of form are we looking at there? Is agapomen, let us love one another?
Subjunctive.
Yeah, subjunctive, right. And what, do you remember what category of subjunctive this would be as far as the meaning? Hortatory subjunctive, yeah. Hortatory subjunctive. It's somewhat analogous for the Hebrew students to the cohortative idea in Hebrew. Okay, number three. Therefore, confess your sins one to another. Jim. Okay, you want a dative here, though, because it's to one another. Confess your sins to one another. And so you want a dative plural, assuming they're masculine. So you want allelois. Omokon Yupsilon Sigma. Okay. What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. Omokon Yoda Sigma. I'm sorry. Yeah. Omokon Yoda Sigma. Data plural. Number four. The sisters gave gifts to each other. Eric. Right. Okay. Alpha Yoda Sigma. Again. Dative, but feminine now, sisters. Number five, bear each other's burdens. Tony, you want to take that one, or do you? Okay. Glenn? Okay. Alelon, again, genitive plural. Bear one another's burdens, or the burdens of one another. Okay. Any fundamental questions on any of those as far as how to use them and so forth? I guess the main thing is note that idios is an adjective and not a pronoun. Okay, yes.
So often the respective pronoun are used
the reciprocal pronoun. Well, they're both used that way. I don't know what a ratio would be, you know, on that. I think you're probably more likely to see the allelos is quite frequent. So if you want to see a real definite reflexive idea, then you're going to probably see allelos, but once in a while you see the other two. It may just depend on kind of the literary style, the emphasis, and so forth. What would be interesting is to study the different authors and see if there's a preponderance of, you know, say if Luke is using this and John is using that and so forth. That's the kind of things that you often see stylistic variations on. Okay, 48D, supply the correct form of tis or t in the blank spaces in the Greek sentences so they will correctly translate the English sentences. Number one, someone gave them the loaves. Who's up next? Yeah, Mark?
Edoken tis tus artus autois.
Yes, edoken tis tus artus autois. And tis will have no accent on this form. Okay, to distinguish it from the interrogative. And some of these other forms that are multi-syllable, it'll either be an accent on the last syllable or no accent at all. You'll have an option on most of those. Number two, he gave someone the loaves. Dale. Okay, is it tina with an alpha or tini?
Tina with an alpha.
Okay. Again, this is a dative, though, because he gave to someone the loaves. In other words, that's the idea. So you'd want the dative form. That would be the iota, tini. So it's just a matter, I think that's the reason that you have the difference there. It's just, in English, it's an indirect object, so you'd want it. So either tini with an accent on the last syllable or tini with no accent. Okay, he gave them something. Let's see, Price?
Edoken ti
autois. Okay, yes. Edoken ti autois. And there the autois is to them. That's dative, but the something is going to be accusative. And so ti is what you'd want. And since it's something, it's neuter idea, so you'd want the neuter form. Yes, John?
How will we know if a verb takes double accusative? Because
dative
is a good candidate.
Yes. Yes. All I can say is it's just a familiarity with a verb in the vocabulary. In fact, in this next chapter, we'll be looking at some verbs that take, even for their normal object, take genitives or take datives, where we would normally expect an accusative. So,
do they list it in the lexicon?
Yes, they'll usually do that. The better lexicons will list that and make note of it, whether it's a double accusative, it takes two accusatives, or whether it takes, you know, a genitive and an accusative. Some verbs, you know, take two objects, one of them genitive, one of them accusative, or dative or accusative, that type of thing. So there aren't very many verbs that do that. So if you're in doubt, you know, if you're going to have to guess, you probably want to guess in favor of the accusative. And you'd probably be more likely right than, more often right than not. But there are certain verbs that will do that. And giving is one that just takes an indirect object, just like a normal verb, but like you say, you get suspicious after a while if you've seen enough of them. Okay, so I guess there's no other answer but just knowing what the verb does. It's a matter of vocabulary. It might even be wise when you're memorizing vocabulary to note those things, you know, make a special note. That's what he'll, in effect, do. He's going to give a list of verbs that do this, and if you listed them in your vocabulary list, it'd be good to note them. Takes a genitive object, or it takes double accusatives, or whatever. Okay, what are we up to? Number three and Steve, or four? Go ahead, four, Steve. No, some of the disciples are seeking the Lord, so.
Satan said, Tom Kurion Tines, Tom Matheton.
Okay, Tines, yes, nominative plural form, good. Number five, the Lord will be found by somebody, John.
Mm-hmm.
Hupo tinos. Yes, hupo tinos. Okay, good. One more consigma there, genitive for hupo. This is your standard passive construction with the agent being indicated by hupo with the genitive. Number six, the Lord will be found by certain ones. Jim. Yes, tinon, omega nu, just pluralizing now by certain ones, plural. Same construction as number five. Number seven, the Lord will be found by some of the disciples. Eric. Yes, hypotinon ekton matheton. Okay, again, genitive plural. Here, just with a little bit more description of it. And then number eight, the Lord found some of the disciples. Go ahead. Yes, hurin tenas ton matheton. Again, accusative now, plural form. Found some. Some would be in the direct object position now. The Lord found somebody. Mark.
Tinas ton
Okurios
Churan Tina. Tina, right, okay. And the number 10, the Lord found something.
Okurios
Churan T. Yes, T. So notice the distinction there between somebody and something. It's just the distinction between masculine and neuter. Number 11, the Lord gave the loaves. Was there a question before we go on there, John?
Number 9.
Yes.
Now we used accusative, right?
But,
the neuter.
Well, it's the form's the same for neuter plural and for accusative singular masculine. So accusative singular masculine or feminine is tina, and then the neuter plural is also tina. So context have to decide on that. So in other words, this could be the Lord found somebody or the Lord found some things plural, and the context of course have to decide that, but the forms would be the same. Okay, that's a good observation. You do get that ambiguity there. Okay, any other questions? All right, number 11, and who's up next? Price. The Lord gave the loaves to some of the disciples. Okay, tisin or tisi ton matheton. Okay, and again, it's dative plural there. Number 12, he did some works. Steve.
Erga tina epoiesin.
Yes, erga tina epoiesin. Okay? So he did some, is the idea. Okay, and it's just agreeing with erga there. Yes.
Back on number 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's he, something.
Mm-hmm.
The word tina.
Mm-hmm.
Would we say the Lord found some things?
Yes, if it was things plural, it'd be, yeah, tina. Or, see, if you saw tina, you'd have that ambiguity. It could either be the Lord found someone.
Confused me because I didn't think in terms of, because something has no plural.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. See, you understand what I mean?
Right.
I mean, we don't see something.
You'd probably not see that kind of expression very often, yeah. The Lord found some things, you know. It's conceivable. I mean, the language will allow that, but it's not... You'd have to be itemizing the things, you know, really focusing on a number of individual things rather than just something in general. Okay, 48E, supply potepu, mepote, mepu, mepos, or apos accordingly. Number one, for you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. I guess we're back to you, John. Yes, pote again, once at one time. Good. Number two, I fear lest somehow I may be preaching the gospel in vain. Jim. Okay, you probably want may post on this because it's lest somehow I may be, since it's a subjunctive here, you probably want lest somehow, and that they gave you may post for that. Page 301 there. So you probably want your may on that, because it's lest, it's the negative idea. So phobu my may post, aka eulag evangelisomai.
Phobu my
subjunctive. No, just a contract verb, I think. In deponent. Yeah, let's see. I think it's just a deponent verb and contract verb.
Well,
unless it's a me verb.
Somehow,
well, no, the AK there, AK.
Oh.
Maybe preaching. Yeah, that's your subjunctive one. Right. Right. Okay.
Okay, is that in vain or?
Excuse me. Yes, that's right. That's right. Evangelisomai. There's your subjunctive form. I may be preaching. Present subjunctive. That's, no, I think that's deponent again, too. Yeah, because it's giving an active meaning here. I may be preaching. So we've got a lot of oddball verbs here. Okay. Mapotad, did you have, I mean? Less at any time. Well, I suppose you could. There's kind of a fine line between those two expressions. Both of them would be appropriate. Less to let that not. Yeah, I think you could go with either one. It kind of depends on the way he's worded. It says less somehow. It kind of tips you off that the somehow is talking about the manner, and then you'd probably expect post. But in other words, the construction might go either way. It depends on whether they're emphasizing the how or at any time. The potes kind of emphasizing that it would never be done at any time, and the less somehow might be in some manner or some way. It's just a slight distinction there, but it's meant more of a distinction along those lines. Okay, number three, we shall find them somewhere. Who's up next? Eric. Yes. Okay, pu autus. And somewhere, just speaking of place. Now, number four, we besought the Lord whether he had perhaps hardened the hearts of his people. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Apos, whether. If somehow, it's kind of a literal idea. Mm-hmm. Whether perhaps, yeah, it's kind of the idea there. All right. Number five. Let us be watchful so that the Lord will not find us sleeping. Mark.
Gregor Roman, Naples, Hemas, Cura, Curain, Ocurial, Capidonta.
Okay, you have Maypost there. This is, again, the same thing, whether it's Maypost or Maypotan. This is pretty ambiguous, so if you had either one, it'd be fine. Let us be watchful so that the Lord will not find us sleeping. So, you know, it's not at any time or so that not, in just a sense of manner. So either apos or, let's see what you have, maypote?
Maypos.
Okay. Oh, excuse me, I looked at the wrong one. Yeah, either maypos or maypote would either one would be fine here. Number six, they were formerly hated, but now they are loved. Dale. That's a good tongue twister. Okay, yes, pote. Good. Number seven, the prophet says these things somewhere. Price. Yes, poo, again, somewhere. And number eight, Steve, let us flee, lest our enemy seize us.
If you go men, Maples, Piazzotten, Hemas, Hoy, Ethroy, Hemon.
Okay. Good. Maypote again, left. And. Yeah. Okay. Maypote, let's see. This one you might have Maypose too, I think. Yeah, you had Maypose. Okay. Maypose or Maypote. There's just not enough information in the English here to decide. So either one would be fine. Number nine, back to John again. Once we were few, but now we are many. Okay, good. Pote again at one time. And number 10, at some time we shall see each other again. Jim. Okay, again, pote again. All right, any questions there? Glenn.
You're interchanging maypos and maypota. I don't get the difference. I could just follow definitions in the book and then match them up, basically.
Right.
What is he getting at as the difference between the two then?
Well, there is a difference between the two, but sometimes the English is not precise enough to cover it. In other words, the only in that first number two. Because I fear lest somehow I may be preaching, I would put Maypost there because the somehow is indicating the manner. But in some of these others, let's be watchful so that the Lord will not find us sleeping, number five there. So that not is, well, may post is what he gives you, so that not there, and then lest or that not. Well, so that not is not that much different. In other words, it's real hard to tell from the English there whether you're emphasizing that it's never going to happen or that in no manner or way will it happen. And so it's a little bit ambiguous. I suppose if you just went so that not, and that's what he put there, you could just probably put may post there and not have any question about it. But actually on that one, I think that there would be some debate about it just the way the English is worded. That's the problem. Again, it's fortunate when you've got Greek to go to and then go to English, then you can see the nuance of it because the Greek will have more precision. The difference between me pote and me pos is me pote, I think if you translate more literally as not at any time with me pote, and then that in no way or something of that nature for me pos, you can kind of see the distinction there. It's one is dealing with manner and the other one is dealing with at any time. And of course, we kind of lump those all things those things together in English, and so we don't see quite the distinction. So I was just saying it's a little bit hard to tell what he's getting at from the English to know which one of those to use. Okay. For example, number eight, the same thing. Let us flee lest our enemy seize us. You know, it's hard to know whether it means let us flee lest at any time our enemy seize us, or lest in any way our enemies might seize us. It kind of depends on the context. It's whether you're dealing with emphasizing whether it's ever going to happen at all, or if it can happen somehow, in some way. And in English, we don't make a giant distinction between that either, usually. Okay. Yes, Mark?
What was the answer to A3 again?
A3. Let's get back here. Okay. Tahimatia. His own garments there. You want ta idia himatia or ta himatia ta idia? Just agree with garments there, but in a attributive position. Okay, anyone else? Question? All right. That wasn't too bad. Going to lesson 49 then, we'll finish this, we'll proceed with this. It's a rather long chapter, so we've got several things to point out here. And then we'll have one more chapter left on the optative and we'll be finished. Yeah, or we'll just be beginning another area. By the way, as we finish, you should be starting to bring your UBS to class because we're going to be doing some translating in class for a while here. And if you've got Dana and Manta, you may want to be bringing that along. I'll try to tell you ahead of time which we're going to be doing, but we'll kind of be alternating there. And then next semester we'll start with diagramming some other things. So we're going to be doing some advanced studies from Dana and Manti and then translating. So we're going to start with the Gospel of John. We'll start with something simple, something you've been reading, and so you can follow it pretty easily as far as your tongue and brain coordination there. And then we'll what I'll do in these translations is I'll have you just bring your UBS for your own purposes at first. And I'll have translations and parsing guides and stuff available here, so in case any question comes up, we can quickly get at it. And, you know, there's odd vocabulary, something like that. So as we're translating, I'm not expecting you to know all the vocabulary in the New Testament. So if you run across a word that you don't know the meaning of, just ask and I'll get it to you real quick, and then we'll just proceed. So it's not a matter, really, of doing this for purposes of grading you as you're doing it in class. It's a matter of the exercise, the constant exercise and experience and forcing yourself. And so there's a reason why I'm having you look just at the raw Greek text and not seeing English, because it's going to force you to start recognizing things. And at first it's going to seem awkward, you're not going to get certain things, but you keep being forced to do it, and it's going to keep improving. So I'll have references so we can smooth it out and get things we don't see, but I just want to get you used to that kind of thing so we can start seeing the pattern, start thinking in Greek and getting a flow for it. And I found it extremely valuable for me personally in my studies and so forth to have that kind of experience. I can remember in the Hebrew class I took at the University of Washington, we didn't get very much instruction, but one thing the teacher was good at is every day in every class, we just went around the room and everybody had to read, and everybody, you know, had to read it out loud and translate and so forth. And that was really a good experience. I mean, it really forced you to do it. You when you're on the spot like that on the hot seat, you know, you do things that you didn't realize you could do. Okay? So that's the reason for it. Well, chapter 49. Yes, was there a question, Jim?
I didn't know. Glenn brought up the subject matter. Yes.
Oh.
When might we expect it?
Oh, yes. Okay.
By the way.
Yeah, by the way, details. Let me think about it. It'll probably be at least several weeks. I'm going to... We'll go through a quick review, and I'm going to give a more of a shortened, you know, quiz on these last chapters. Not over the whole book.
We're
not, 42 on, something like that. The last test went up to 42, I think. So it'll be 43 to 50. And I'll tell you for sure what it's going to be, but I think mainly, as far as these paradigms are concerned, it'll be mainly concerning just the regular form. In other words, Lu, I'll just have you... Just for recognition purposes, for subjunctive and so forth, just to have a look at Luo. There's an awful lot here. I may want to even break this up into a couple of quizzes. That might even be better because there's a lot of detailed memory work here. We might have a quiz on, say, the imperative and subjunctive for Luo and then lump the rest of them together. So I don't even have a formal test written up for those chapters yet, so I'll just give some quizzes on it, make it a little bit less intimidating. Main thing on these things is because they're not used as frequently, we want to lay the stress on the ones that are used the most frequently, and then also for recognition purposes, like you're perfect, flu perfect, and so forth, I want you to be able to recognize them, but not necessarily be able to form every irregular verb in the world in all those forms, just the drop of a hat. I mean, we could really push ourselves and learn how to do that, but then, you know, you're wasting a lot of effort because you're not going to be doing that much. I'd rather use the effort as efficiently as possible. Okay, so I'll give you some information on that probably by the end of this week, and we'll set some dates. But that's what I'm minded to do, is maybe give a couple quizzes on these verb forms and so forth, and try to handle it that way. All right. Chapter 49, we're looking at the vocative. We talked about that already. And then other uses of the cases. We're on the bottom page 301 here, talking about the nominative case and some very other uses for it. We saw the first category here, the nominative. So far, we've only seen it used as the subject of a sentence or predicate nominative. And now we see the nominative is used in place of the vocative. And this will occur even in instances where there is a vocative form. And we find one example, Hokurios mu kai ho thaos mu, Thomas saying, my Lord and my God. And there is a vocative form for both of those words. With an epsilon, but here the nominative is used. It's almost a... in this case, it might be debated whether he's actually making an address. It may be an exclamation of the identity of the one that he's talking to. In other words, he's coming to the revelation that he is... This one he's looking at is his Lord and his God. Rather than just addressing him per se, it's more of an exclamation, a revelatory exclamation. And the nominative is very appropriate to that kind of thing. Naming something, in fact, that's going to come up in this next category. But then one other example, Mark 5:41, to korasion soi lego egere, little girl, I say to you, arise. That's more of a clear-cut case of a nominative form being used as a vocative. Here is an address. Okay, and then part B, in introducing or citing names or titles. Of course, nominative has the idea of naming, and so this is very appropriate to the use of a nominative case. Naming something, expressing the title or name of it in a kind of an abstract sense. Yes, Glenn?
I wanted to ask about that example, Mark 5:41. Could it be that they use a nominative there because that's a neuter, and they don't mention any neuters
speaking
of vocative?
Yeah. There probably isn't a separate form. I'd be very surprised to find a separate form for the nominative here. So in this case, it'd just be... This is the vocative. I mean, another person come along and analyze this. This is the vocative form. Let's say the vocative. Yeah, right. So the larger percentage of nouns don't have a distinction between nominative or vocative, and so form-wise, so a person could still call this vocative function and not even put this in the category of the nominative. Another use of the nominative, just say this is the vocative form. It doesn't differ from the nominative. Or somebody else could come along and say, well, this is a nominative function. It's functioning like vocative or something, but. It's kind of one of those debatable things, how you're going to label it. But I think you've got a good point there. I'm not familiar with any. I'm not familiar with any. It's the only ones that we see here If there are any, they'd have to be in this third category over here. Following out of the third declension have vocatives that occur in the New Testament. There's no case number subject to each of these nouns as altered as indicated. And this is only indicating third declension, too, so it wouldn't fit there. So it doesn't look like there's a place for it to fit. There's some masculine nouns of the first declension have it, some about 30 masculine nouns of the second declension, and none of the neuter nouns are mentioned here, so I don't think there's any difference in the neuter form for the vocative. I've never run across one, and from that doesn't indicate that there are any. So that's the point. This would be the same form whether it was considered vocative or not. Okay. And then the only one he's got where there's the example he's got where there is a vocative form is this John 20:28, and that might be debatable, like I've said, as to whether this is a vocative or an exclamation or something. And so what it might be interesting to check through the New Testament, see if there's instances where it's clearly, unmistakably from the context and a clear address to someone, and they use the nominative form rather than the vocative form, if a vocative form also exists. And that's something that has to be checked out. Probably wouldn't be too hard to, well, it might be hard to check it out, because you'd just be looking for a normal nominative form when there is a vocative form. Yeah. Yep, that's what we would need. Okay, that would have to be a real subtle program, because you'd have to be able to program the computer to determine whether something is an address to someone or not. See, it's not just, I mean, it'd have to be able to pick up from the context. That one you may need the old human... It causes you to realize what your human brain is capable of. It really is. I mean, it takes us more time, but the things that we can discern, the subtleties that we can discern, it'd be awful hard to get a machine to do.
In a situation like this,
it would
necessarily take more time.
Yeah, right. I know. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Then part B, in introducing or citing names or titles, we saw this first example. Humes phonete me ho didaskalos kai ho kurios. You called me teacher and Lord. And here, you call me something, you might normally expect a double accusative situation here. But because it's a naming, you call me the teacher and the Lord. You see, putting the article on both of those, it's reciting the names of something is called. And you'll often see nominative used here, kind of an abstract sense. Then Revelation 9:11, another one. Onoma eke apolumon. He has the name Apollyon, and Apollumon is the nominative form here. Of course, it might not be too obvious from the form that you see there. Those proper names are a little bit tricky along these lines. But this is the nominative form, and this is just naming something. Yes?
In John 13:13 here, would you put the article in there in the translation?
I think I would, just because it is there in the Greek, and it's he's not just saying any old teacher, any old Lord, you know, the teacher and the Lord. I think I would put it in there. Yeah.
The question I would, and it'd be difficult to check, would be in every situation we have name and the title, but mm-hmm. It doesn't come with the article.
No, that's true. See, the proper name sometimes... Sometimes you see whole Paulos, and sometimes you see Paulos, you know. Sometimes you'll see it with the article without, so there may be some debate there. And when you see with the article, it's hard to translate it, the Paul, you know, as opposed to Paul. It's just got the definite idea, you know, you're talking about someone, you're maybe placing a little bit more emphasis on it, but it'd be awful hard to translate literally. And that kind of depends on how this is being looked at here. These, neither teacher nor Lord are proper names per se. They can both, you know, function both ways, and that's perhaps why the article, maybe there is giving them that sense of a proper name almost. And so that's probably why he's translated that way. You call me teacher and Lord, and relying on the context to give the idea that this is a special term. But if you don't want to rely on the context alone, I think putting the teacher and the Lord would be an appropriate way to do that. All right, the accusative case. Some other uses of the accusative. First, a quick review of the uses we've already seen. The principal function of the accusative case is due to indicate the direct object of a verb. We saw that back in section 49. Other uses of the accusative, which have been discussed in previous lessons, are those of object complement with certain verbs. And the second object with certain verbs, so certain verbs take two objects, two accusatives. The retained object with some of the same verbs when they are in the passive voice. Remember, when you convert them to passives and they have double accusatives, one of them usually stays in the accusative and the other one gets converted to the nominative. And so you may see an accusative situation like that. The object of various prepositions, of course, that's one of the most common uses of the accusative. And then the subject of an infinitive, we saw that also as the use of the accusative, and that's in a remark on section 259. In addition to these uses, the accusative case appears in various adverbial uses. This is kind of interesting. And these are perhaps hard to predict, but once you see them, you can pretty well figure out what's going on. Adverbial, of course, is meaning that the whole thing's functioning like an adverb, and as adverbs generally aren't declined. So Matthew 27:57, tunama Yosef, or the tunama is just a contraction for to onama. It just contracted those two. So it's equivalent to onama Yosef, Joseph by name. Joseph by name. So he's talking about Joseph, and then it says Joseph by name. And then to onama, this could, is debatable because it's a neuter noun. It could be considered nominative as well. So I don't know, that may not be a proof point here, because someone could come along and say that's just nominative and it's naming it. But this phrase by name could be considered also accusative in a sense. Another example here, John 6:10, is a little less ambiguous. Anepesan un hoi andres ton arithmon hos pentas kilioi. The men therefore sat down in number, pentakis kilioi, excuse me, a number about 5,000. Now, ton arithmon is number, and it's an accusative case. And this is being considered one of these adverbial accusatives. It's the men sat down, and in number is not the direct object of any verb here, but he's considering it understood as something of the nature of about 5,000 in respect to the number, you know, with reference to the number, in respect to the number, is about 5,000. So it's a little bit hard to analyze and ask yourself the question, why is this accusative rather than, say, dative? And in fact, we'll see dative used in a similar way. And it's used in such a way that it'd be awful hard to predict whether you want to use a dative or an accusative in a situation like this. They're both used in similar fashion. Sometimes the same phrase is used both ways, both in accusative and dative. Okay, then Matthew 23:37, often when I've gathered you as your children together as a hen gathers her brood, hon tropon, in the place of, or he says in which manner, in which manner, as a hen gathers her brood under her wings. So it's kind of a, hon, of course, your relative pronoun for which, and then manner, both in the accusative case here. So the idea of the accusative being used in an adverbial way. See, it's modifying the gathering. It's the gathering of what, as, or in the manner that a hen gathers her brood. Okay, then part B, with expressions indicating extent of time. Especially extent of time is used, accusative is used. John 2:12, emen anu polas himeras, they stayed not many days. So they, and we might translate it, they stayed not for many days, or for not many days. It's got that idea of a duration of time, extent of time, and accusative, polas himeras. And then Luke 21:37, ein de tas himeras, and every day, and then you have tas de nuktas, at night. So watching the temple at night went without. Again, accusative function, accusative case forms functioning adverbially, describing the time at which something happened. In translating adverbial accusative expressions, one must be guided by the context. Most such expressions, especially the last three cited above, are quite stereotyped in form. So, and that's indicating that you're dealing with idioms that are, you know, frequently used and have this kind of a stereotyped form, and they're almost as though you treat them as adverbial expressions and almost ignore the case functions or the endings and so forth involved. But again, context has to be your guide in these. And they're usually not that much, that troublesome. As you're reading along, you'll find that that's the only thing that fits. And you can't make it a direct object or something or anything else, so it's the only possibility that's left. Okay, then the genitive. We'll find some other uses of the genitive. The principal function of the genitive case is to indicate that one noun or pronoun stands in relationship of a modification or dependence to another. That was our basic distinction there. Section 80 covers that. The genitive is also used as the object of certain prepositions. That's quite frequent use of the genitive. In comparisons, with this idiom of one thing being something of something else, using the genitive, and that's somewhat analogous to the way Hebrew does it. And in the construction called the genitive absolute that you're all very familiar with participles. Now, three other important uses of the genitive remain to be noticed here. First one, the genitive is used to indicate the direct object, that is, the single object of certain verbs, the most important of which are listed below. So this is a series of the most important verbs that use genitive for what we would normally call a direct object. The thing that normally is in the direct object position, that is the one that receives the action of this verb, is in the genitive case rather than the accusative. So akuo is perhaps the most common, first one listed here, but akuo, to hear. This one's used both with the accusative and with the genitive. And it might be interesting again to study the nuances between those two if there's something that's being indicated. But to hear something, to hear someone, so forth, is often given with a genitive idea, the direct object. And it's almost giving the idea to hear of something or hear of someone, etc. In other words, if you look at the meanings of at least some of these verbs, you may be able to, you know, see why, or at least have some rationale for why it might use a genitive. Others would be harder to imagine.
Would it possibly be because of the putting it in the genitive gives it more of a feeling of interaction with the object? In other words, if you're using accusative, you're acting upon something.
Mm-hmm.
You're hearing something, it's because something else is making a noise, or with taste, you have more experience. One of these other verbs,
mm-hmm,
have something that is responding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the kind of sense you get of it, and take hold of something too. You're touching, taking hold of something. When you're taking hold of it, it's affecting you and you're affecting it. And there's almost kind of a middle sense to it. That's something that may be pursued as far as it's concerned. There does seem to be interaction in almost all of these, taking hold of, catching. There's a number of these taking hold of type verbs. Ones along those lines, desiring for something, longing for something. You're being affected yourself by the thing. It's not just performing an action on something. It's performing an action, but it's also being affected by the action. And just about everyone, need of, lack of, and so forth, something. That's have an abundance of something. They all seem to be related that way. In fact, you'll see the word of in many of these English translations of these verbs. And of course, has been normally our indication of genitive, so that makes some sense, too. So, akuo, we have anekomai, endure, bear up, put up with. Again, there's this kind of a back-and-forth idea there. Haptomai, touch, take hold of. Arko, to rule, or in the middle voice, to begin. That one would be a little bit harder to see, but again, ruling is involving certain interaction when a person is ruling over someone else. And having the rule of someone is maybe the having authority over someone is maybe the idea. Geomai, taste, experience, sometimes with accusative also, but this again gets this almost reflexive idea. Epithumeo, desire, long for. That's quite obvious that that verb connotes the idea of being affected by something as well as affecting something. Epilambanomai, to take hold of or catch. And krateo, to take hold of or grasp. Mimneskomai, to remember. And mnemonuo, to remember also. That one's also used with accusative. So remembering something, again, there's something that's affecting you. You remember it, but it's affecting you in the process. Perisugo, abound in, have abundance of. Again, to have abundance of something. And hustereo, to be in need of, lack, or to be inferior to. So those are the most common verbs that are going to take genitives in the normal position you might consider an object. So be warned that sometimes you'll be reading along the sentence and you'll see something genitive and you can't figure out what it's there for, and you've been looking for the object and you can't figure out where that is. This is the reason. Okay, and then the genitive is used as a second object. Well, that's the last bell of a few verbs which have direct object and accusative. Some of these will have double accusatives. It's kind of analogous to our double accusative situation, only one of them is a genitive. So we'll look at those tomorrow. So there'll be no assignment other than that.